today is about the South Africa model, and it's called Moving Away from the South African Model, which is a little bit of a conclusion if you want. Anyway, the research that I'm presenting today came out of a series of practical observations. And basically, we are observing that the South African model is still the model for through commissions worldwide. It is the model that is widely discussed, not in terms of academic thinking, not in terms of people that specialize on the field, but in terms of political thinking and the models that countries look at when they want to establish a new through commission. And there have been recent studies about this aspect. There have been studies on peace negotiations in Sierra Leone and Liberia, DRC, that showed that during those peace negotiations, the South African Truth Commission was the only model of Truth Commission that was considered by the people at the peace table. And then the people that then decided to establish a Truth Commission in those countries. We heard this morning that the same happened in Kenya, that the people that were deciding for the establishment of a Truth Commission in Kenya basically only knew and discussed the South African model. And the South African model is also generally used when national consultations are organized on the establishment of Truth Commissions. And recently, national consultations have finished for the establishment of a Truth Commission in Togo. And the questions that were asked during those national consultations were based on a model of Truth Commission that was the South African one. Recent ideas for establishment of Truth Commissions that are yet to come are also based on the South African model. There was draft legislation for the establishment of Truth Commission in Nepal that was not even tabled, actually, last year, that was based on the South African model, and now there are discussions about the establishment of a new Truth Commission for Northern Ireland that also includes process of amnesty for truth. And finally, it looks like the South African model is the model to which Truth Commissions compare, Truth Commissions themselves. And there are very interesting parts of reports of Truth Commissions that have been published in which the Truth Commission expressed regret because they were not able to do as the South African Truth Commission did. And for example, there is the first volume of the report of the Liberian Truth Commission that was published in preliminary recommendation last December, January actually, in which the Liberian Truth Commission said, we regret that we were not able to carry out reconciliation processes at local level, and we were only able to put together victims and perpetrators in one case. And so you really see that even if, in terms of academic debate and in terms of how you structure the commission, probably South African model is not central anymore, it is still central in practice. And it is still central for practitioners and for people that actually work in the commission on how you deal and how you think about a Truth Commission. And so this is the reason for the paper today. So what I am going to discuss with you is the practice on amnesties and prosecutions of 38 Truth Commissions, which are basically all the Truth Commissions that I was able to find and classify as Truth Commissions. There is a big disclaimer to the paper today, which is this is not a qualitative research. So nothing that I will say in the next 20 minutes has anything to do with whether the Truth Commission was a good one or a bad one, or whether it worked well or not. This research is only in quantitative terms. So how many Truth Commissions took a particular stance in terms of amnesties, and how many Truth Commissions took a particular stance in terms of prosecutions. So here we go. The 38 Truth Commissions that are the object of this paper, I divided them in three generations, and the reasons for this division should be clear during this presentation. So the first generation of Truth Commissions is basically comprising all the three commissions that were established before the South African one. From 1974 to 1995, there were 12 through commissions in 11 countries. And it is quite interesting to see that these through commissions were, of course, created in very different contexts, and as we heard this morning, context is really key to understand these processes, but still, there is consistency in the way they have understood their role, and also there is consistency in the way that they have acted with respect to prosecutions and amnesties. So 9 of these 12 commissions had an active role in establishing prosecution. So they either gave evidence to the courts or they handed over names of perpetrators to the courts, which is something that probably now we would find problematic. But at the time, many of these two commissions were considered mainly as commissions of inquiry, and the idea behind them was carrying out investigations in the police sense of investigations that then would feed prosecutions. None of these two commissions recommended amnesty for serious human rights violations or amnesty also for other crimes in general. The problem that they had was exactly the opposite. Some of these two commissions had to work within a context in which an amnesty was already in place. And you can see at the bottom, there were Argentina, Uruguay, and El Salvador. And in all of these cases, the amnesty was later condemned by international bodies and is now considered to be illegal. In other 3 cases, the three commissions worked within a context that had an amnesty, but they ignored it, or they said that the amnesty was not lawful. So there were Uganda, Sri Lanka, and Haiti. So the practice of, let's say, first generation through commission is, I would say, quite consistent with respect to these two factors, prosecution and amnesties. There is a first turning point that arrives, of course, in 1995, which is the establishment of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in South Africa, and so the adoption of the Promotion of National Unity and Reconciliation Act. And subsequently, a challenge before the Constitutional Court of South Africa of this act and the judgment of the court in the Asabo case. There are 2 main points that have to be underlined on the system of the South African Truth Commission, which I'm not going to explain in detail because I'm sure everyone is familiar with, and many people in the room are more familiar than me. So, 2 points, 2 elements of the way the Truth Commission worked in South Africa. 1, the Truth Commission gave amnesty in exchange of truth, and 2, the Truth Commission gave amnesty in exchange of truth, but for serious human rights violations. So there are 2 aspects that have to be kept together. One is the amnesty for truth process, and the other one is the quality of the amnesty. So for which crimes the amnesty was given. In the case of South Africa, it included serious human rights violations, torture, enforced disappearances, etc. 3 years later, there is another big event, which is the adoption of the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court. One could consider these 2 events as giving conflicting messages, which justifies the title. So from South Africa, you have the message that you can give amnesty to perpetrators of serious human rights violations to achieve reconciliation and to achieve the truth about what happened in the past. At the same time, basically, you have a completely different message coming out from the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court, that there is actually no impunity for genocide, crimes against humanity, and war crimes, and there is actually an obligation to prosecute these crimes. It is interesting to consider, as a footnote, that these messages that I consider conflicting now were not considered conflicting at the time. So at the time, South Africa delegation that negotiated the Rome Statute and was in Rome was actually quite happy with the outcome of the International Criminal Court. And also, there was a very interesting speech that Kofi Annan, the UN Secretary General, gave in South Africa, in which he said, there is no incompatibility between the South African model and the ICC, because, of course, the ICC will not start prosecutions in cases where you have a bona fide reconciliation process, as was the case in South Africa. So at that time, these two things were considered not conflicting at all. But then, of course, there have been developments after that. And so here we go. Second generation of through commissions. So the South African through commissions and all the through commissions were established after that until 2004. There were 16 through commissions. The basic element of the denominator of these through commissions is that the practice is not consistent anymore. That there are the practice of the has now.